It's the Farandole from the L'Arlésienne Suite No. 2 by Georges Bizet, a performance by the Montreal Symphony Orchestra conducted by Charles Dutoit, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The show is your connection to local performances. Good afternoon, I'm Kevin Kelly. And that music will be played on the concert Sunday night by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony. Our first portion of the program today will deal with that concert. Coming up, I will be talking with a woman best known for her acting, but who has a new and, in fact, debut CD out as a singer. Her name is Molly Ringwald, and she will be performing in Charleston at the Eastern Illinois University, the Dowden Fine Arts Center there, twice this week, Wednesday night and Thursday night. So tomorrow night at 7:30, Thursday night at 7:30, and we'll be hearing more about that and samples from her CD just out in April coming up later on the show. But first, I want to welcome the conductor of the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony. They'll be performing Sunday night at 7 at University High School in Normal. And she has been with them, it's Deanne Bryant who's been my guest in the past. Thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to find out about what youth orchestras are doing in the area. There are a few around. And yours has been around for many years, and you've been conducting, what, for about 20, pretty close to 20 years by now.
Well, this is my 20th year, and the symphony is celebrating the silver anniversary, so it's 25 years old.
Wow, well, congratulations then.
Thank you, and this is a special concert because of that.
And one of the things that makes it special is you have a former member of the orchestra coming back to solo with the group.
Correct.
You want to tell us a little bit about that and the tradition that falls into?
Well, Jeff Holbrook is a graduate of University High School as well as Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony. And his return is actually exciting because he is principal trumpet in the Seoul Philharmonic Orchestra in South Korea, and we're flying him home to perform with us. Jeff has been incredible to stay in touch. Last January he called me to see if he could come and work with our students, our brass section, and he was leaving a day after our first rehearsal for the second semester, and he said, that's fine, I'll come in, and he spent the whole evening working on Fanfare for the Common Man with my brass. So he's staying in touch with us, which makes this even more special, because my members now will know Jeff from last January. We have each fall, we invite someone back to play. Often it is an alum that has gone on. Many times it's someone who's working on their master's degree, and it works very well in what their programming is in working on music. Other times it's people in the community that we recognize for their contribution to our young members.
What do you know about other former youth orchestra members who have gone on to play in professional orchestras? Are there many, as far as you know?
No, I don't know in that way. We've had people go on. John Corkle has gone on with his percussion playing and done a lot of playing, but not always in a symphony. He's an alum of the Youth Symphony as well as Normal Community. We have a lot that have gone on as music majors and have become really excellent teachers. But as far as into that next level of professional in an orchestra, that's a really small percentage of people, as you know.
Yeah, it always is. I mean, even those who go on to be music majors who have that as an aspiration, it can be really challenging. But I wonder if also part of it is what you said initially about Jeff Holbrook, that he has kept in touch and probably most don't. Or do you keep in touch with a lot of your former members?
It's difficult. I mean, they go on with their lives, and if I find out about someone that is doing something, that's exciting, but you're right, not often do they keep in touch that close. Jeff is exception in that because he has definitely kept in touch with his community.
You're going to play music by Neruda, and honestly, I forgot his first name.
He has several. It's George Baptist, and there's about four names. Johann Baptist George Neruda.
Yeah, and his trumpet concerto, it's one of the standards for that instrument. Was this a suggestion of his or of yours?
It was a suggestion of his because I had never heard of the gentleman. Mm. I had no idea what this man, where he was from, what he was about. And so we did some quick research and listening to hear this trumpet concerto. And when I asked other people who play trumpet, of course they know I do not play trumpet. So it's a very, very pleasant concerto, just really a nice piece.
And how are your students enjoying putting it together? It's mostly strings, right?
It's all strings, mm-hmm. Yes, it's all strings. I think they're enjoying it. I am. He's from the Baroque era, but it has a little bit of a different flavor to it, and I think that's, you know, makes it more interesting. The thing that's the same as Baroque is that two of the three movements still have the ground bass feeling, and the third movement has a little more interest, but the violins are extremely busy.
Let's hear a little bit of this final movement of the Neruda Trumpet Concerto. The soloist here is Ole Edvard Antonsen with the English Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Jeffrey Tate. And the piece will be played by Jeffrey Holbrook, Associate Principal Trumpet of the Seoul Philharmonic Orchestra in Korea, and a former member of the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony, with which he will be playing on Sunday under the direction of Deanne Bryant. This is Live and Local. Music by Neruda simply called a trumpet concerto, the last movement, Ole Edvard Antonsen, the soloist. And that's a piece that will be one of five on Sunday night's concert by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony, conducted by Deanne Bryant. And that piece will feature one of its returning professionals now, his name, Jeffrey Holbrook. And Deanne Bryant's my guest here on Live and Local. You're starting with some music by Schubert. Is that the first on the program?
Yes, we're playing the first movement of his unfinished symphony. And the students are very much enjoying that symphony, which is just terrific to me. It's one of the best ones. So.
And I imagine you've played this with, conducted this with them before, over the
yes,
years?
Yes, over the years, because it's such standard literature, and the instrumentation is just right for us, and it just is right where we're living.
In what sense?
Stretching the musicianship of our members and growing as musicians.
Did you feel surprised that they're enjoying it a lot?
I'm surprised at the young ones, because our youth symphony is not leveled. We have, actually this time we have a fifth grader, and it goes through, we have two people that are freshmen in college. Hmm. And the young ones, we have some seventh graders and a couple of eighth graders, and they are sparkling with this piece. They're enjoying it a lot.
I asked the question partly because of the way you put it initially, but also because I remember some years ago with the youth orchestra here in Champaign-Urbana, the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra, we were working on the piece, and I usually at the end of the year will ask what were their favorites. And I figured it would be whatever more of a pop-type piece that we were playing that year, but this was the one mm-hmm. that was their favorite. And I was surprised, just mm-hmm. because it's a pretty serious-sounding piece.
Yes, I agree. And the kids, you know, are into it and really working hard to be sure that it's as played as well as they possibly can play it.
When you put together a program, do you try to balance, I mean, I use the term pop, but you know, some sort of a popular piece like the Farandole that we open things with something fairly serious like the Schubert, with a concerto. What's your thinking when you put a program together?
My thinking, first of all, is to service the instrumentation that we have, because we currently have a trombone section of three and a tuba. And to have music that has parts for them, you can't go back real far. So you have to be sure that you've got something more contemporary as far far as instrumentation is concerned, yes, I usually pick out a more difficult piece and then range it back from the more difficult to be sure that we all have a satisfying experience.
You mentioned that the orchestra is not leveled. What does that mean exactly?
Well, like Peoria Youth Symphony has three levels, and I don't know what they're called, but a beginning level orchestra and a middle and a top. And we have just one orchestra.
So everybody who is qualified to play at the general level of the orchestra gets in this one.
Right, right.
Which makes it hard to choose music also, I imagine, because you need to challenge everybody but not make it impossible for those who perhaps aren't at the top level.
Right, except that this semester these students have just surprised me because we really, if you look at this list, we really don't have an easier thing. If you say easier by saying the farandole, you take that up to tempo. It's no longer easy. And the younger ones have just been working really hard to be sure that they're contributing well to the group. And I really can say in conducting the group, I've forgotten to look out for the young ones because they're doing it.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
You're having the chance to perform, I think, with the Illinois Symphony on their upcoming Pops concert.
Yes, that'll be Friday, November 22nd, and we will be playing the farandole with the Illinois Symphony, as well as an arrangement of Joy to the World. And the Joy to the World is with the Illinois State University Chorus.
And that should be a lot of fun. Is this something that happens every year with the Illinois Symphony?
I think this is the sixth year that we've been invited to sit side by side with the people who get paid.
And how do the kids look at that? Do they look at it as just something else to do, or?
They're very excited, very excited. In fact, scheduling-wise, this is a little bit difficult for them because the 23rd on Saturday is the big IMEA festival, and nearly all of my members are in the IMEA festival. But they would not miss doing this with the Illinois Symphony.
What do you think they get out of it?
The feeling of being in the middle of a lot of musical sound and all of it good. The recognition of Alistair Willis as the conductor, that he understands where they are and appreciates what they do. And the audience, the large audience, they like that.
And I imagine they get, at least for a brief while, a little bit of mentoring from whoever they're sitting next to.
Right.
The professional group.
Yes.
Is this something that the orchestra comes to you and says, what do you think the Youth Symphony can handle? Or did they just suggest a piece and it works for you or it doesn't?
Well, it started out that way. When Karen Lindeo was doing this, and we'd talk about, you know, what to do, and usually it would be Sleigh Ride. It's, in fact, one of the pieces has always been Sleigh Ride, and then a second piece, and then I would choose the second piece. But this time, Alistair wanted to do the Joy of the World with the choir, and it fit in the programming. So that's how that worked out.
And you picked the farandole then?
Kind of, yeah. By agreement, I guess.
Oh, well then, that's the best way to work it, isn't it?
Right.
Tell us about the other two pieces on the program.
The Morning, Noon, and Night Overture?
Yeah.
Okay. It's by Franz Suppé. It's a roaring overture, as they all are. This one has a cello solo section that would be played by Alexander Sue, our principal cellist, who does a fabulous job of playing that solo. It ends very, very energetically, and I always wonder, why don't I pick something that doesn't wear me out so much, but we live with that.
Wear you out as the conductor.
Yes.
Yeah.
It moves quite along, as you, I'm sure you know. The other piece we're ending with, the American Salute, which is uses When Johnny Comes Marching Home as the theme throughout the piece, which is kind of symbolic for us this time because our alumni are being invited back to perform with us if they wish, but invited back certainly to be a part of the 25th anniversary.
That's fantastic. It's the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony concert Sunday night at 7 o'clock at University High School in Normal. It'll feature Jeffrey Holbrook, who is now the associate principal trumpet of the Seoul Philharmonic Orchestra in Korea, but is a former member of the orchestra. And all will be conducted by Deanne Bryant, who's celebrating now her 20th year with the orchestra. And let's go out with the music that will open that concert. It's the Unfinished Symphony of Schubert.
Can I say one more thing?
Mm-hmm.
These concerts are free, open to the public, and everybody is encouraged to support these young musicians.
Thank you. This is a performance by the Vienna Philharmonic led by Carlos Kleiber, and thanks, Deanne, very much for joining us on Live and Local. That's the beginning part of the first movement of Franz Schubert's Symphony No. 8, known as his Unfinished Symphony. Carlos Kleiber conducted the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for a conversation with actress, writer, and singer Molly Ringwald, who in the latter capacity will be performing at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston tomorrow night and Thursday night. Our program today is made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Verdi's Requiem on Thursday, November 21st at 7:30 p.m. in the Fullinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Sinfonia will be joined by the UI Chorale and Oratorio Society and the UI Women's and Men's Glee Clubs. Here's music from Molly Ringwald's CD, just out in April, which I guess has been about half a year now. It's called Accept Sometimes. Music that those of you who were fans of the film from the 80s called The Breakfast Club might well have recognized. But you may not realize that the person who sang there also was one of the stars of that movie, and many people considered her to be the real star of that movie. Her name, Molly Ringwald, and this comes from her new CD, which is called Accept Sometimes. She's going to be performing twice in Charleston over the next couple of days with her own jazz trio tomorrow night at 7:30, and then she'll be singing with the Eastern Illinois University Jazz Lab Band on Thursday at 7:30, both performances at the Dowden of Fine Arts Center in Charleston. She's my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thank you very much for joining us for the show.
Hello.
This is, I imagine, that a lot of people probably lead interviews with you right now with that particular song because of the connection with films that is what most people associate you with. Do you still get a lot of surprise when people find out that Molly Ringwald actually sings?
Yeah, I mean, less so now because the album has been out since April and it's done really pretty well, far exceeded my expectations. So I think more people know about it. It's gotten some great airplay, but yeah, certainly I think I'm much more well known as an actress.
But you've, as you say yourself, you've been singing since the age of three, which is about the same time you made your acting debut. Is that about right?
Yeah. My father, Bob Ringwald, is a traditional jazz musician, and so I began my jazz education early with him and performed in front of the California State Fair for my first performance at age 3 and a half. So, yeah, it was actually something that I did before, really before I got serious about acting. I always thought that I would choose the musical route, and then got a little sidetracked.
Yeah, what about that sidetrack? not a bad sidetrack. Was that a little bit of an accident, or?
It was something that I did. I guess fairly simultaneously, along with other things. I was also writing as soon as I learned how to write. It was something that I just kind of did all the time. I either wrote or sang or acted, and it was just the acting because of those movies became so front and center. And it's hard when you really succeed at something not to continue to do that. And I really enjoy acting. I just like to do other things as well.
And always have done, apparently. Mm-hmm. Your early acting included singing in musicals when you were a kid, and it includes that now. You've did a stint as Sally Bowles in Cabaret. You've been in a tour of Sweet Charity.
Mm-hmm.
And then this musical, which I don't know, Tick, Tick, Boom.
Tick, Tick, Boom. It was written by Jonathan Larson. It was what he was known for writing Rent, and Tick, Tick, Boom was the musical that he wrote before Rent. He was a friend of mine and a really wonderful composer. So that was a really nice project to be involved with. But yeah, I've been singing pretty much my whole life, but I always knew that I wanted to put my own jazz band together. I just didn't know that it would take me quite so long. But better late than never is my motto.
Well, those early, especially famous movies from the 80s with John Hughes were often referred to as teen coming-of-age movies. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this album is your coming-of-age experience in music, at least professionally speaking, as far as the world is concerned.
Yeah, I think it could be pretty accurately characterized as that. It is a coming of age of sorts, and I always sang. The only person really that I sang jazz with was my father, and it was pretty much traditional jazz, which I love. But my tastes tend to run more modern, and it was a big deal even for me to sing with another musician, and it did feel a little bit like I finally grown up. I've lived in other countries, I've had three children, but now that I'm not singing with my dad all the time, I finally have grown up. And it was really exciting. It was really exciting to put my own band together, and I think I have the best musicians that any vocalist could ever hope for.
Was working with them for this album really the first time working with musicians like that, or have you made occasional breakout public performances now and then?
I've performed, at various times now and then, but these are really the first musicians that I, we really started working together in 2008. First with Peter, who is my pianist and arranger and collaborator and co-producer, partner in crime. He was really the first person that I started to work with, and then pretty soon after that, we put the whole band together.
And is the band that you're bringing to Charleston the same band as are on the CD?
Yes. I think, I always try to travel with the band that's on the CD, but once in a while, they're booked with someone else or their own gigs and, but this time, yeah, they're all going to be there.
So what made you decide to take the leap to do this?
It just kind of happened, as most things do in my life. It was, the desire was there. It was just the opportunity hadn't presented itself. And I really think that it was just meeting Peter that really, it was just, we really got along. He's also an actor who had this great history with jazz and it really came out of that relationship. It was like I finally had the opportunity, and so it was just I decided to pursue that passion. And I really didn't know exactly what would become of it. I sort of imagined that it would just be this little side project, and play these dingy little clubs around LA. But I guess when you're me, it's kind of hard to do things as a side project, like kind of just get a little bit more public, and it just kind of grew, and the band sounded great, and we had a lot of fun together, and then we decided to do the album kind of almost as a commando mission, just kind of decided, hey, this is, we sound too good to not have some kind of record of this. And so we did it independently, and then Concord heard it and liked it, and just kind of everything sort of happened like that.
Well, let's give a listen to another of the songs from the CD. It's called Except Sometimes, Molly Ringwald and her trio, and they're going to be in Charleston for performances tomorrow night and Thursday night. More about that in a moment. This is one that is, it's called The Very Thought of You, a Ray Noble tune, and a beautiful tune. Before I actually play it, many of these are considered to be from the Great American Songbook. Was that the overall concept you had in mind?
Yeah, most of the songs that I really like to sing are from the Great American Songbook. Although Ray Noble, I think he might have been British. But I think it still counts as the Great American Songbook because it's been popularized by so many American singers. But I would say just about every song that I sing, with the exception of maybe Sooner or Later, which is more modern, from the movie Dick Tracy, and then, of course, Don't You Forget About Me, which was from The Breakfast Club.
It's The Very Thought of You with Molly Ringwald here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The Very Thought of You, featuring Molly Ringwald and her trio, who are coming to Charleston, the Doudna Fine Arts Center. She and the trio will be performing tomorrow night at 7:30, and then she'll be appearing.
Actually, I have to correct you. Oh. I believe it's my quartet. There's Peter Smith on piano and Clayton Cameron on drums and Trevor Ware on bass and Alan Mosqueda on the alto sax. And me.
She'll also be performing with the Eastern Illinois University Jazz Lab Band Thursday night at 7:30. So you said this was sort of a commando project. You didn't know where it would go. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen now, musically?
You know, I don't know. I'm also a writer. You know, I write books. I just published my second book with HarperCollins, and you know, I'm working on a new book now. And I have three kids, and then I'm also thinking about doing a new album. So it kind of, I don't know exactly. It's sort of like one of them is going to win out, and I will be just as curious to find out as you. And of course, there's acting projects as well that I've been working on developing. So we'll see.
You referred to singing jazz, and of course that's what the group you're performing with is. But many of the we'll still call it the Great American Songbook tunes are certainly jazzy. Do you get involved in improvisation as a singer at all?
You know, I like to change my phrasing, and you know, I love the quality of jazz in terms of how it's different every night, and I love improvisation. I think that I'm a little bit more of a classicist in terms of I love the melody, and I don't really usually like to stray too far from it. And I'm not a scat singer. Although I really deeply admire it in other singers that I like, it's just not my thing as much.
Is your dad still around?
Yes, he is.
What does he think of all this?
He gigs more than I do.
Yeah, what does he think of all this?
I think he's very proud.
Has he offered pointers?
You know, a little bit here and there, but I think both of my parents are just very supportive of every creative endeavor. I really sort of lucked out there, you know. I think he just enjoys what I'm doing and just shares in my enthusiasm for it.
And is he still primarily working in traditional jazz, which is more or less, you know, New Orleans style jazz?
Yeah. Oh, he'll never do anything for that. He's the biggest musical snob that I know.
So the likelihood of your actually singing with his present band is therefore small, or might it happen?
No. Oh, I love traditional jazz. I'm, you know, for my own band, I prefer sort of more modern American songbook, hard bop, whatever you want to call it. But I love singing with my dad, and I love that kind of music as well. It's just, you know, it's just something that I share with him, I think.
Have you ever spent any time studying music in a professional way?
Oh, you mean like musical school or musical theory?
No, not necessarily. Well, yeah, going and working with a voice teacher or working with a jazz teacher with intention of doing something further. Since you said at one point this was what you thought you'd do.
Well, my teacher was always my dad. I mean, I grew up with, you know, a jazz musician and a jazz singer. So I think all my early training was, you know, at home. And then, you know, I switched to acting pretty young. I mean, I was doing my first professional job was at age 10. But I had lots of just regular voice training, you know, because I also did musical theater as well. So I had some training there. And then later, you know, recently I've been working with a really nice jazz singer named Sarah Gazarek. And she's been really wonderful to work with. So, you know, and I hope to continue to be able to do that, you know, take some master classes with musicians that I admire.
Who are some of the musicians, the perhaps older singers of the past who you have in mind when you're working on some of these songs, most of which are, you know, associated with certain singers or a few?
Well, you know, I never try to emulate anyone because, you know, I prefer just to sound like me, but there's definitely been singers that I admire and have admired and have kind of, you know, sort of made me fall in love with these songs. You know, I think I actually thank some of them on the liner notes of my album, you know, starting with Bessie Smith, who was my first introduction to jazz music, more traditional, of course. And, you know, Ella Fitzgerald, Anita O'Day, Blossom Dearie, Susanna McCorkle was somebody that I really admired a lot, still admire. Peggy Lee, Chet Baker, Andy Bay. I think those are some of the people that come to mind.
There's at least two songs on the CD that I know have direct ties to your past. One of them, of course, we played from The Breakfast Club, and then there's one, Where Is Love, from the musical Oliver, which was a show you were in as a kid.
That's right. I was the only girl in the boys' chorus.
And a wonderful show it is, too. Are there other connections of that sort with some or many of the songs here?
I think those are the only two that I had any connection to in terms of my acting. You know, the others are just songs that I've really just grown up loving.
Do you think that your singing in this style, or even just singing at all, informs your non-singing acting at all, or the other way around? I mean, I know you've got these three tracks going between acting and writing and singing. Do they work with each other?
I think so. I think that they all definitely inform each other in some way. You know, I feel like I approach my songs, my singing very much as an actress would. You know, I think about who is singing this, who are they singing it to, whether, you know, what are the lyrics. It's not just about the music. The lyrics are always very important to me. And the same way I think as a writer, you know, as the way that I write is very musical. It has to have a certain rhythm, and, you know, I always read everything that I write out loud, and it has to sort of follow a certain kind of rhythm. And again, I think the way that I write is very informed by character, and that comes from my training as an actress. So I think it all just kind of, they all sort of feed each other.
I want to close with another song from the album, of course. This is Jerome Kern's tune, Pick Yourself Up. What character did you imagine for this one?
It's very funny that you introduced it as a Jerome Kern song, because I always introduced it as Dorothy Fields. But, of course, it was a collaboration between the two of them. You know, Pick Yourself Up. I just think that Pick Yourself Up is just such a happy song, and it's just so encouraging. You know, I think it's generally comes, you know, in the set, very often comes after I sing a song, a Billie Holiday song called Don't Explain, which is not on the album, but we do it in concert. So I think Pick Yourself Up is really just literally that. We just sort of pick ourselves up, and it kind of, it's impossible not to feel kind of happy when you hear that song.
Maybe the writer side of you is the one that says that's a Dorothy Fields song, and the musician side of me says it's Jerome Kern.
Yeah.
One other question for you before we actually launch into that song. You're going to be performing with the Eastern Illinois University Jazz Lab Band. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen there?
I don't know. I've never performed with them before, so I have to check in with you after.
What are the these tunes that they've picked, and then you'll join in?
I'm really looking forward to it. I have no idea what to expect, but it should be fun.
Well, it sounds like an adventure all around. It's Molly Ringwald, who will be with her jazz quartet tomorrow night at 7:30, and then with the EIU Jazz Lab Band Thursday night at 7:30, both performances at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston. And she's my guest here on Live and Local as she is touring around supporting her album called Except Sometimes, out earlier this year. This is called Pick Yourself Up, a collaboration between Dorothy Fields and Jerome Kern. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Nothing's impossible, I have found, for when my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, start all over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip, be grateful for the pleasant trip, and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.